pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Level.
Thank you, Chair Noren. So, would it be best?
Yeah, actually, change the.
You have
that,
the.
Is that
yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
I would have the power.
I would prefer that.
She's missing a page.
Ah, that's better.
Yeah, each regional board and the state board, they all have their unique floor plans for the public meetings. So, I find this. More appropriate. I'm sorry to place my back in your direction. I apologize. Thank you, board members, chair, vice chair, and staff, and certainly the citizens here of the Great Klamath Basin for the opportunity to give you a report from the State Water Board. And my intent as a board member is to communicate some of the processes, activities, legislation that are going on in Sacramento and particularly how it relates to this region, the North Coast region, and I'm happy to answer any questions at the board as we go along. You know, a little about my background. I used to be a regional board member like these fine folks at the San Francisco Bay region for about 4 years, and my background is in civil engineering. I'm a professional engineer in wastewater, mostly, with about a decade of experience designing projects. And then I also have a degree in biology. So I have some regulated experience, and as well as different variety of backgrounds. So I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I don't know a lot about any particular thing. So, as a state board member, you really are faced with that humility, you know, of learning every day. And so I really welcome this opportunity to learn about the issues here in this region through today's hearing. So, on to what the heck the state board is doing. Well, for the benefit of folks here in the room, you know, we have a structure where we have a state water board in Sacramento, 5 members. We're full-time members, and then we have 9 regional boards around the state that are based on hydrologic basin. And there are now 7 members of regional boards. There used to be 9, but as of July 1st, that's changed. And that's part of my legislative update. I won't go into a great deal of detail on that because we covered that in August. But I'll go over the... My report will be organized according to budget and then recent activities of the State Water Board and pending activities of the State Water Board and then legislation, because it kind of like a lot of folks here may think of this time of year as sort of, you know, harvest period. It's in Sacramento, I think it's a period of trying to make a lot of laws and for better or worse, right? So I'll give you a quick report on the legislation that the governor signed that relate to water issues. Okay? So on budget, not a lot to report, but just to remind everyone that we are a 5% pay reduction and 1 furlough day a month as state workers. It goes on until June 30th of 2013. And so, you know, that obviously on an organization-wide basis has an effect on our responsiveness and productivity. But I know at the higher levels and down to lower levels, we're committed to delivering the same level of service. And we'll make the best we can with what we have. You know, and that, in that regard and with that spirit, you know, we're trying to walk the talk by really evaluating the fees that we collect and the level of service that we provide. So there have been a couple of processes as far as recent activity that I wanted to report to the board and to the citizens. There's kind of 3 areas I'd like to discuss. you know, generally we're 80% or more of our budget is now fee supported. When I came out of college and did some work in the regional board, it was a lot more general fund, more taxpayer funded, not fee supported. Now we've, as an organization, gone to more of a fee supported organization. And as such, and as it should, it engenders a greater level of scrutiny. But it also, you know, through our processes that are public, the feedback we received when we raised fees, you know, in September of 2011 was, well, okay, you know, if your water boards are going to raise the fees, we want to see what that's going to be spent on. You know, we want to see how your resources are aligned with expenditures and revenues. And so the state board, before I was on the state board, committed to a resource alignment report that was issued in April 2012 and is on our website and available for anyone to review it. And basically, out of that effort, we've now, as of August 8th, the state water board approved a work plan of our staff to go about the business of assessing the costs of compliance with our regulatory programs and looking for opportunities to create efficiencies and you know, in terms of really being more customer service oriented. You know, we pride ourselves in customer service as an organization, but this is a way to really demonstrate in a transparent way, you know, where what monies we're bringing in and how we're using them. Yeah. So that's a report that's been issued, and so now we're trying to get different groups of our regulated community into focus groups for those who happen to have the time to spend on this, and I respect people's time. But we have stakeholder groups in wastewater, stormwater, irrigated lands, waste discharge requirements, and 401 water quality certification for wetlands or stream fill. So we're looking at these program areas and working with stakeholders and looking at ways to improve efficiencies and identify areas of cost of compliance where we're not getting a lot of bang for the buck. And I can imagine, you know, certain monitoring programs will have the opportunity for refinements. So that's the first thing, resource alignment report. The second thing I'd like to draw attention was in September, our annual performance report. And this is our fourth year at the State Water Board of trying to bring all the information on our programs from all the regions, the nine regions, in a format that's user-friendly for interested parties to look at our performance in terms of certain metrics like, you know, how many permits we've issued, what we were planning to do that year, what did we accomplish, you know, how about our inspection program, and then some degree of environmental outcome, because there's a lot of expenditures with the TMDL program and very complex program, but laudable goals that we all share in terms of water quality improvement, but recognizing a need to hold ourselves accountable to meeting environmental improvement goals as well as these other targets of productivity. So we're going about that process every year. It's not real easy because at the regional level, you know, I respect that it's never easy to set targets that you know you might not meet, or, you know, a year from now priorities change and being held to those targets. So there's a tension internally in that process. But I think it's healthy because, you know, my own editorial comment, because really in the end, if you're meeting your targets every year, you know, what does that say? Are you aiming too low? So, you know, it's just a process of looking at what you're doing and explaining it. You know, in the end, it's a process of explaining ourselves to the citizens that we serve. So that's the second thing. So resource alignment report, annual performance report, and then I have to at least draw attention to something we approved yesterday. It's a good news story in that our staff at the State Board was pretty vigilant in identifying an opportunity to save taxpayers a boatload of money, about $10.8 million in present value in terms of its state revolving fund program. And so basically, simply stated, as soon as the 10-year term on some bond funds that we issued, and this is a program for helping communities build wastewater infrastructure as well as other assistance for clean water, and there was an opportunity identified to take advantage of low interest rates and refinance the bond funds. So it was a kind of a no-brainer as the board. We just said, yeah, that's smart, do it. But I mean, it shows that staff is paying attention to how important it is to be vigilant about our financial obligations. So that was one of those things where you want to give staff a recognition because of the significant savings to taxpayers. Okay. So that was the soul-searching part of the presentation. in terms of just talking about an issue I know is of great concern to the citizens of the state. I guess another piece of good news is this year, every September we look at our financial condition and we made a determination we did not have to raise fees this year, and probably not next year either. So we're keeping a close eye on that issue. So moving on, there's a report that we issue every month. It's the executive director's report. You have an executive officer, we have an executive director. I don't know why they have a different name. But that's a useful resource for you all as far as getting some detail and a sense of the breadth of the work we're doing at the State Water Board. It's one of those things where you just click on the link, in the agenda that you can drop down on our web page. And so a lot of my report comes from that. Let's see. So coming up, we're working on some general permits, and there was some recent legislation that relates to general permits that I'll talk about a little later, about ex parte communications. And aquatic weed control permit we're looking to issue in November, and we had a public hearing on this in August 7th, and it covers the discharges of residual algicides and aquatic herbicides from direct applications to surface waters to control algae and aquatic weeds. We had this permit in effect, and there were some different permits that we've consolidated into one to try to make the process more efficient. We've studied the water quality effects of these practices and are able to really focus, the regulatory program, because we've really ascertained and determined, what the potential impacts are. And so it's not that big a deal. What can I say? It's if you do good practices, these, my colleagues at the Department of Pesticide Regulation are go through the process of registering these pesticides, and these are the better ones on the market for water quality protection, if applied according to the label, that sort of thing. So that's a regulatory program that's kind of dialing back, the monitoring and the reporting. We're going to be doing some amendments to the ocean plan, which isn't as much specific to Klamath Basin issues, but certainly on the coast. And we talked about that a little bit in August, in terms of the model monitoring vessels in marine protected areas elements. And so that report's available on the website, of course. We had a workshop on August 22nd, and we're going to be considering these amendments for adoption on October 16th. And it relates to the Marine Life Protection Act and the Marine Protected Areas and a directive under the Marine Life Protection Act, a directive to the state and regional boards to establish state water quality protection areas in the ocean environment. And it's really, it just recognizes like other things like cultural resources or you know, other biological resources, just the importance of these areas and how there has to be a consistent overlay. So we're just using our authorities to calibrate and coordinate with other agency court authorities. And a big issue that might touch some folks here, certainly the water board and staff, are the general stormwater permits. And we talked a little bit about that in August. And so an update on where they're at, you know, Caltrans, there's a statewide permit for stormwater discharges from Caltrans facilities. That permit was adopted on September 19th. It has some region-specific requirements that staff has all has weighed in on from a regional board standpoint. And so that one has been completed. We also amended the construction general permit in July to remove numeric effluent limitations for pH and turbidity. That was ordered by a court decision in December of 2011. So that was an action we took in July. That issue, so there, and there's four stormwater permits for everybody's information. There's the stormwater discharge from construction areas, stormwater discharge from industrial areas, which we're considering. We're having a workshop in 2 weeks about the second draft of that statewide industrial stormwater permit. That's two. And then there's the stormwater permit for communities that are under 100,000 people. It's the jargon you hear is the phase two MS4 permit. But what that really means is communities between 10,000 and 100,000 people and the requirements that these cities or county areas or universities or that sort of thing, institutions, the requirements they have to control pollutant discharges when it rains. And what are the, and it's sort of a best management practice approach. The controversy with those programs is the cost and the square peg round hole fit of a kind of a permitting system designed for wastewater where you have effluent and effluent limits, you know, end of pipe, trying to apply that regulatory program to diffuse runoff from the urban landscape, not unlike the challenges with irrigated agriculture. So we've got the phase two permit, and the schedule on that is a December 5th adoption. We had a workshop in August. We received 105 comment letters on the draft, the second draft permit. And so staff is busy at work addressing those. But that's a, it's a good process of sort of getting our staff and our board aligned with reality as far as what resources available to do what actions and on what timeline. So we're working diligently on that to make this a good fit, recognizing that it's a significant source of pollution to our waters from urban landscape. We're trying to emphasize low impact development principles in all of these permits, whether it's Caltrans, the phase two MS4, the industrial general permit. Construction is more of a short term impact, but just how, you know, how we design the urban landscape to slow water down more than speed it up is kind of one way of looking at it. And all the functions in our water bodies that benefit from a slower percolating of these waters. So that those requirements are, it's a lot of devil in the details, but that's what we're working through to make it commensurate with the budgeting levels of our municipalities. So I think, did I cover them? Yes, we have Caltrans, phase two MS4 is coming up, industrial general permit workshop next couple weeks. And then finally, in relation to this, we are at a statewide level addressing the issue of litter and trash in water bodies and trying to come up with a sensible program to encourage a reduction of trash. And we're real concerned about our cumulative impact on the Pacific Ocean and ways to address that on, at all levels, whether in our infrastructure or as source protection. Good. Okay. So I think then the last thing I'd like to talk about, which may be of interest in terms of our activities, then I'll move on to legislation. Okay. The State Board had a hearing in August about the Central Coast region's agricultural irrigated lands conditional waiver. You may be aware of this process. There was an order in March 2012 by the Central Coast Regional Water Board. It was appealed to the State Board. That's part of our function at the State Water Board, is to consider appeals from parties that consider themselves injured by a regional board action. And so we're considering that petition, and as such, I can't even talk about it, except that just report the facts of what we worked on, because it was a two-step request to the State Water Board. It was, number one, you know, appealing the order to the State Water Board on the merits of the order, a formal petition, which is under consideration. But what was a little different about this was there were also specific provisions of this adopted order that were requested for us to stay on the basis of economic injury. And so the State Water Board had a full-day hearing on that, and then the members went into closed session and went provision by provision on the requested stay and a careful assessment of whether those provisions should be stayed on an economic basis. And we found that a number of the provisions should be stayed pending our full review of the order. Now, it gets down to the specifics. And what was the basis? You know, on the global scale, there might be some consternation about State Board getting in the business of the regional board's details. But it had to do with the plain language of the provisions and how they could be misconstrued or misinterpreted. The clarity of our language and our orders is imperative. And sometimes we do a great job, sometimes we can do a little better job. So this doesn't send a signal one way or the other at this time. We are going to consider the petition in full on the merits of the order. But there were specific provisions stayed pending our decision. And I'll give you an example. Containment structures. The way the language in the order discussed the evaluation containment structures, there was a good intention of preventing migration of contaminants to groundwater. You know, in the Salinas River Valley, nitrate levels in groundwater that support communities as drinking water is in excess of levels, the nitrate is in excess of levels that is protective of public health, especially for pregnant women and infants. It's a real serious public health issue. So the language of the order, considering containment structures of irrigated runoff, had language in there about constructing the containment structures in a way to prevent migration of pollutants. Okay, the problem with restricting the migration of, say, nitrate through a containment structure, however well-intentioned, the problem with that policy is that it will lead to, the way the language was, it would cause someone out of wanting to be in compliance to go immediately to lining those structures, which is very expensive, and it would discourage the future construction of such structures. Well, I got a big problem with that, because those structures function to conserve water resources in an area of the state that is very sensitive to water quantity. It's not like, you know, certainly the northern North Coast, you know, in terms of runoff and rainfall. And you know about Carmel Valley and that issue about availability of water for urban areas and agriculture. So containment structures are a water conservation measure. And to actually discourage their construction inadvertently because of the language of this provision would be a real disservice to water quality and the citizens because a lot of these liners may be perfectly fine. You know, nitrate is different than other contaminants like synthetic organics or that sort of thing, you know, or metals. Nitrate is very migratory, and we want to get into the details of what's technically feasible when it comes to preventing nitrate from getting the groundwater. We want to minimize it, but if we have language in our orders that prevents it, it's not aligned with reality. So I'll just give you a little detail of the thinking there on the containment structure language and how it could have unintended consequences. So, at any rate, we looked at some deadlines. We stayed on the basis of extending deadlines. But in the end, you know, we know the success of a program like this depends on the ownership of that program by those who are in the regulated community. I've got 10 years' experience of being in a regulated community. I'm not there right now. I'm the state water board member. I'm a different role. But I understand that issue. So I wanted to give you a little drill-down detail into the why of how we would determine whether a stay would be necessary. But we're considering the whole order on its merits, and we're putting ourselves on an aggressive timeline to consider the order by about September of next year because there are several provisions that kick into gear in that order after that point. So we recognize our responsibility to have timely review. And a thoughtful review. We stayed in that room until 10 o'clock p.m. that night. We worked several hours. So I know I'm just not to be defensive about it at all. I'm just more to be transparent, you know, in terms of here's some of the logic. And in the end, it comes down to a plain language review of the order and its provisions and the unintended consequences. One of the themes was, when we ask Central Coast Regional Board staff about what their intent was behind some of the provisions, well, they explained it in the hearing, but the plain language of the provision wasn't consistent with the explanation. You know, well, that's not our intention. Well, we got to do a good job of writing our intention down, so that someone who picks it up out of the blue, picks it up and reads it, understands what the requirement is. So I hope that sounds like a thoughtful process. It's important to us that the integrity of the program is upheld, that we support the regional board, which we did. If you look overall, we were supporting them, but we wanted to work on some specifics. And then there's other issues that we're going to take up globally on review. So it's not done. But we were looking at the stay issue and whether a lot of money would be spent potentially needlessly. So let's move on. On to the... And actually, do you have any questions for the board members on that before I move on to legislation?
Any board member comments or questions?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to explain that process a little bit. I'm going to move on to legislation. There were 14 bills signed into law by the governor as of the end of September that related to water issues. I'm not going to go over all 14. I know you need to get onto your business today. One of the Assembly Bill 685, state water policy bill, was signed. And I think it relates to this, you know, growing awareness of the nitrate contamination issue in certain groundwater basins that serve for drinking water sources. It sort of spurred on the legislators to, the legislature to address the issue in some way. This one's a global statement of state water policy. This bill declares it to be the established policy of the state that every human being has the right to safe, clean, affordable, and accessible water adequate for human consumption, cooking, and sanitary purposes. And then it goes on to direct state agencies to do a better job coordinating. So it's a legislative statement. That's 685. Assembly Bill 1492 relates to forest resource management. A great interest in this region here. And establishes a new assessment of 1% of gross receipts on the sale of lumber project. It establishes a new assessment of 1% of gross receipts on the sale of lumber products and engineered wood products. The revenues from the new assessment are deposited into the Timber Regulation and Forest Restoration Fund and used for various purposes, including paying for the costs of various state agencies associated with the regulation of timber harvest operations in California. It's not just Water Board, but other agencies in our coordination. It appropriates $1.5 million from the Timber Regulation and Forest Restoration Fund to the Department of Fish and Game. And I think that they have a new name now. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
This is going to get confusing. For their review of the timber harvest plan. So there's a specified earmarked, if you will, $1.5 million to Fish and Wildlife, I believe they're called now, for their role. AB 1750 was signed into law. That's the Rainwater Capture Act of 2012. It allows landscape contractors to construct rainwater capture systems for landscaping purposes, and it codifies the State Water Board interpretation that rainwater collected from rooftops does not require a water right permit. The bill also makes various findings and definitions related to the concept of rainwater capture. You know, it's one of those things where sometimes if you want to be successful with the water resource management in this state, you have to get the regulations out of the way. That's sometimes when we're doing our job our best. Not always. So AB 2230, recycled water and car washes. This is 2230. This bill requires an in-bay car wash or conveyor car wash permitted and constructed after January 1st of 2014. So we're still got another year to go. But new car washes have to install, maintain a water recycling system that recycles and reuses at least 60% of wash and rinse water. And it obligates them to use recycled water provided by a water supplier for at least 60% of its wash and rinse water, where that's available. It does not include self-service car washes. This type of approach implements the urban water use reduction requirements that were signed into law in 2009 of urban areas reducing their use by 20% by 2020. And this one is pretty good on efficiency. We're talking about many hundreds of thousands of acre feet per year statewide. That's 2230. So I had some questions from board members on SB 965. This is a law authored by Senator Wright on the issue of ex parte communications with board members. And I think, as I've discussed in private, it's a little of a two-edged sword, but maybe we can have some discussion if you like. This bill makes it easier for interested persons to communicate with members of the water boards by allowing ex parte communication with members of water boards with respect to the adoption, modification, or rescission, or, you know, ending of waste discharge requirements, conditional waivers of waste discharge requirements, and conditions of water quality certification that apply generally to broad classes of discharges. So general permits, general conditional waivers for different agricultural reasons. This bill also has requirements related to providing interpreters at meetings if requested. So what does that mean? Currently, from a state board perspective, it's been kind of a little challenge this last year with the stormwater permits I discussed, the four different ones, because they're broad programs, which you could argue kind of policy level, because they're affecting so many communities or so many individual landowners and that kind of thing. But by the letter of the existing law, they're permits. So even though they're general permits, they're quasi-judicial actions, because a permit sort of has the implied, you know, like enforcement or judgment. Hey, that's what we inherited. So in the strict interpretation of the existing law, ex parte communications with regional board members or state board members was not allowed for the general permit actions. And that was a, you know, problem at the state board for a lot of interested parties that we work with. They wanted to have an opportunity to talk to state board members about the pending permits, the specific language issues, the cost concerns, etc. So now, for general permits, that opens the door for communications with board members in addition to staff. You know, you only have a couple of, you know, a handful or maybe one staff person working on these general orders in regions or at the state level. It's difficult for them to be available on a timely basis and be responsive with so many entities and cities and counties and irrigation districts, etc. So by making board members available, it increases the amount of communication that can happen during the development of these requirements. More of an opportunity to have your concerns listened to more personally. It matters, actually, you know. So it's funny. But the problem, one of the unintended consequences of potentially opening these kind of things up is now the state board members, we're full-time. It's our job. We want this kind of thing. We want communication. We have more time because we're paid to spend and work with staff and to communicate to staff the concerns. We can enhance responsiveness. The problem is regional board members, they get $100 a month. If you're in Los Angeles region, there's a quasi-judicial process there. They're, you know, municipal regional stormwater permit, and they got 80 cities. You know, I'm concerned a little bit for regional board members, having been one for 4 years, just about the ability as a volunteer, more or less, to respond to a lot of input. So there will be a challenge, I think, with this on regional boards. We want to meet the challenge, but I think it's a different playing field from state and regional boards on the ex parte communication. But in the end, you know, we do better when we communicate more, and so it's an interesting challenge for us. But that's the general permit issue. So getting back to kind of the big picture, quasi-judicial for permits, and then our actions are more quasi-legislative for things like statewide policy. And now general permits have been brought into the quasi-legislative model, which encourages input. And so we have to live with the consequences of that. Any questions?
I think we're good.
Well, I've taken a lot of time. I want to thank everybody for giving me the time to talk about things going on in Sacramento. And thanks for the honor of being up here. It's really great to be in this important part of the state. Thank you.
Steve, thank you very much.